So dear friends, thank you again for the invitation to spend this evening amongst you Dharma friends and talking about the Dharma and all of us swimming in the Dharma. What fun, how precious. So for the reflections for tonight, let me bring up my notes. It's teaching on Zoom has all of these joys and challenges of managing windows and all that. So bear with me for a moment. Here we go. Okay, great. So it's been a hard week in the U.S. It's been a hard month. It's been a hard year. It's been challenging in so many ways. In so many ways. Where to begin? It's been a heart sink week, or heart sink period, I would say. So many of our lives have been turned upside down, not just with the pandemic, with COVID-19, with the changes, with loss of lives, loss of livelihoods, and especially the loss of livelihoods, especially impacting minorities and communities of color much more harshly. Economic injustice in the middle of a pandemic, and the pandemic of racism and continued racial injustice just every day. Lack of leadership or unethical leadership. Global changes, the environment. It's a lot. It's a lot to be sitting with. It's a lot to be living through. So the topic for tonight is really one to help us make room, more stability, to have more resilience, to balance all the sadness, all the worry, all the challenges. So the topic for tonight actually is inspired by, and let me share my screen because I can. This is Zoom, so here we go. There. The topic for tonight's talk, Reflections, is inspired by the Book of Joy. It's hard enough already. So the Book of Joy, this book was an instant bestseller. It came out in 2016. And it was inspired by, or it was actually based on, 5 days of meetings between the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu in Dharamsala on the birthday of the 80th birthday of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So these two old friends got together in Dharamsala for 5 days, and they talked about joy, the nature of joy. So I'll stop sharing for a moment. I'll do more things I'll share in a moment. But so why this? And the idea of this topic tonight is not so much to run away from all the sadness and difficulty and grief that we have. Not at all. It's not about putting our head in the sand. That is not the nature in which, that's not the motivation for this topic at all. In fact, the reason for bringing joy in is so that our hearts can contain more of the challenges. We can be more available. We can withstand. We don't have to actually be overwhelmed with sadness and anxiety. There is some resilience. There is some balance, because as human beings, we have a negative bias anyways. Our minds are like our Velcro for difficulty, for sadness. And as it's been said, Teflon for good experiences, for well-being and joy. So by actually turning our heart to joy, we can balance, we can, instead of, you know, this natural imbalance that we have, just balance it a little more so that we can be upright in this 2020, which is, somebody said, you're going to compost 2020. Yes. So that with these practices, we have a more space to be available, both for ourselves and, most importantly, to be of service for others. Because if we are overwhelmed, if we're completely overwhelmed, there's no room. We're just in grief, we're in sadness all the time. So in order to bring ourselves back to center, yes, I can be here, I can be present for this, I can be present for myself, and I can be present for others, support others through this. So really, turning our minds to joy is not just so much for ourselves, it's really to help support others. Because if we're out of commission with grief and overwhelm and worry and fear, then others have to come to our rescue. We become a liability, not just for ourselves, but for everyone around us. But by actually having more capacity, we can support others through this. We can support ourselves and others through this. So I'd like to say why this has come up, this book, which is now, 4 years old? Recently, a friend of mine had a birthday, and I realized that this friend had been really very challenged, many things happening in their life, and also COVID-19, what's happening for all of us, many of us. And I thought, what would make a good birthday present? So this is the book I gave them. And after I gave it to them, I started to read it again myself. And I thought, my goodness, such gems. I need to be practicing this to myself. I am not immune from everything I mentioned. You know, listening to the radio, my heart sings, really? So these are the practices I need. And I would love to share these with you, with your permission, with this understanding that it's not about turning away. It's not about forgetting and putting our head in the sand, but it's about building more resilience. So if that sounds okay, I have your permission. If you give me thumbs up or I see your nod, yes, then I will proceed. Great. So let me share my screen again. I want to share a couple of things from the book before I talk more about it, about the Book of Joy. Let's see, where did share screen? Here we go. Okay, so the Book of Joy is the name of the book. And these two world leaders, their friendship is just lovely to read about. Their humor, how they their laugh together, how they tease each other, is just lovely. Just to share a few photos. I hope you can see this. Can you see the photo of Dalai Lama kind of jumping in the back of? Just looking at their levity and to say, you know, these amazing beings, of course, they're human beings just like us, as they keep reiterating, inspiring as they are, that they're just human beings. As the Dalai Lama says, he's a simple monk, he's another human being. But also, how joyous they are, given all the adversity in their lives. The Dalai Lama, having lived through exile most of his life, and his community and his people and his country, Tibet, in having been not getting into the political details, but as we know, Tibet and China, how challenging it has been for him as both the spiritual and the political leader, and Desmond Tutu having gone through apartheid and having received death threats, et cetera, and how joyous they are. So I found this to be inspiring. And I love this photo, this Dalai Lama blowing Desmond Tutu a kiss and Desmond Tutu holding the chin of Dalai Lama. It's just so playful. And here's another photo of the two of them laughing, deeply laughing, just joyously. And the last photo I wanted to share during the five-day dialogue, I think this was taken. So a lovely book, really a lovely, lovely book. So a few things I want to share from this is, actually, from the introduction, let me see if I can share that to you. Let's see here. Here we go. Oh, yes. Let me see if I can. Oh, yeah. I wanted to read to set the frame. I'm going to share it again. By the way, I feel it's nice. It's cozy. It's one. You know, there are less than 25 of us, so it feels very cozy tonight. If we're in one room, we'll all be sitting around, so I feel kind of cozy. I can be a little informal with you. So let's see. Let me share the screen again. Here we go. So this paragraph I wanted to share, the invitation to joy. No dark fate determines the future. We do. Each day and each moment, we are able to create and recreate our lives and the very quality of human life on our planet. This is the power we wield. Lasting happiness cannot be found in pursuit of any goal or achievement. It does not reside in fortune or fame. It resides only in the human mind and heart. And it's here that we hope you will find it. And one last couple of lines. Every day is a new opportunity to begin again. Every day is your birthday. Isn't that lovely? Every day is your birthday. Just the sense of every day is a new opportunity to begin again. May this book be a blessing for all sentient beings and for all of God's children, including you. I just love that. All sentient beings and all of God's children, just feeling myself included in both of those categories, and signed by both of them. So in the invitation to joy, every day a new beginning, every day starting anew. So what they discuss in the book, maybe I'll share one more thing with you. Okay, let's see. Da, 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 da. Here we go. Okay. So, there. What I wanted to share is, so the book, you know, they talk about the nature of joy, why are you not morose, just lovely chapters, the obstacle to joy, etc. It was lots of personal anecdotes. And what I wanted to actually talk about tonight is inspired by the fourth and fifth day of their conversation, which is called the Eight Pillars of Joy. Perspective, humility, humor, acceptance, forgiveness. I'm glad somebody brought forgiveness in earlier tonight. Thank you. Gratitude, compassion, and generosity as the eight pillars of joy. So what I like to do, actually, is to spend some time. Let's see, how are we doing with time? Okay, time is running by. What I like to do is to actually talk about the first of the eighth the most. Spend the most time talking about perspective, because perspective is really the basis. Perspective is really the basis of all the other ones, all the other pillars of joy. And then spend a little bit of time, perhaps, on other ones, and then wrap up with what's actually what subsumes the all eight, which is generosity of spirit, which can really subsume all eight. And it's something that I've been really sitting with and practicing in my own practice. So in the little time we have together, I like to talk about. So perspective is number one, is numero uno. Even though both teachers, both traditions, agree that generosity and kindness and compassion are actually the most important aspects of happiness. But we need a foundation. We need a foundation of the perspective before we get to generosity and kindness. So we need to set the foundation. So the first pillar, perspective, not just these two traditions, both Christianity and Buddhism, but also science suggests that what has the greatest influence on our happiness or unhappiness is our perspective, is our ability to reframe a situation. There is work done by psychologist Sonia Lyubomirsky, who's shown that number one is our perspective, how we see, what is our perspective towards our life? And second is our capacity to experience gratitude and to be kind and generous, for them having the most impact on our gladness. So when we see the world in a particular way, our experience changes, and it feels like the world itself changes. As the Buddha says in the Dhamma, in the Dhammapada, with our minds we create our own world, basically, or thoughts, the mind is for the forerunner of all things, our perspective. So the ability to see even calamity as an opportunity. I found really inspiring and you know, so many examples from so many people, but since I'm bringing this book up, in the book, the Dalai Lama is found to talk about how the calamity of losing his country, he sees that now he's reframed it as an opportunity, which is jaw-dropping, that the last half century of exile, the way he says it, because he's been in exile, he's had wider contact, he's had more new relationships, less formality, and more freedom to discover the world. And he says, so if you look at it from one angle, you feel, oh, how bad, how sad. But if you look at it from another angle, at the same tragedy, that same event, you see that it gives me new opportunities. So as I was reading this, for me also, having been an immigrant and having lived in diaspora for more of my life in this country than in Iran, the country of my birth, and had to leave because of the Islamic Revolution. And there's a funny story when I was a kid, and my older sister was leaving to go to the West to study, and this was long before the revolution. The story is that I was a toddler, and I would say, I would never leave my country. I would never leave my country. And fast forward years later, through the Islamic Revolution and everything that happened, had to leave. So I've often thought of that as opportunity, that, oh, what an opportunity it's been. And at times I realize I've actually, at the times when I looked at it with sadness, especially for my mom, was an older generation, and in diaspora, for someone who's older, it is much harder. They're harder. There's much more sense of isolation. And when I've realized, when I focused on that way of framing our immigration, it's made my heart very heavy to think of it as, frame it as a sad, as, oh, loss of country. But the times I framed it as, oh, I've had the opportunity, all these opportunities I wouldn't have had to discover who I am, and it's a different way, different culture, really framing, seeing the goodness. My heart has been buoyed. I mean, even as I tell you this story now, I can see both angles. Both are true. Of course, both are true. And it's not Pollyannish to choose to see it a particular way, because it empowers, it gives me more strength to be in a particular way instead of feeling weak and, oh, poor me, and what has the world done to me, and what has life done to me. It's just, it's a choice. It's, happiness is a choice you make. Happiness is a choice I make. And in the perspective, in the way to frame different events. So another example is, I just sat a 2-week retreat at home, which I wouldn't have been able to if it hadn't been the gift of COVID. All the retreats are online now, and actually I hadn't been able to sit retreats for the past couple of years, especially long retreats, because of my chronic health issues. And being at a retreat center has been really hard. And wow, I was able to sit a 2-week retreat, the gift of COVID-19. So to see, to be able to see and appreciate the gifts that even come from darkness, the box of darkness that we are given, the poem, now I'm forgetting, I'm trying to get it from my memory, it's not part of my notes, Mary Oliver's poem, that someone I loved once gave me a box of darkness, It took me a long time to realize that too was a gift. So if you look at parts of your life, aspects of your life, that were a box of darkness, as an experiment of the mind, thinking of the good of the various aspects of the goodness that came out of this box of darkness. And one thing that comes up also is not to feel guilty about reframing. So the examples that I gave, for example, the example I just gave about COVID-19, yes, it's been challenging. People have died, etc., etc. And it's been a gift in this way. So both can exist. Not to have a feeling of, oh, people have died. How can I feel happy about, gosh, I just sat a two-week retreat. Yes, of course I can feel happy about that and hold both. Yes, and both of those could be held just because one is happening. To honor the darkness alone, the difficulty alone, to honor that alone, it belittles us. It belittles our capacity, our humanity, because there's both joy to hold as well as challenges in life. And in fact, as I was motivating us earlier, by opening up to joy, gratitude, goodness, there is more space to contain the challenge, the difficulty. So the Dalai Lama suggests that we look at every situation, every problem, he says, from the front to back, from back to front, all the sides, from top to bottom, bottom to top, from all six different angles. I love the way he talks about really looking at everything from every aspect, and for it to allow, and for this seeing from these different perspectives to give us a more complete and holistic view of reality, so that our response can become more constructive. And it's so much easier to change our perspective. We're not born with our perspective. We choose our perspective. You choose your perspective every moment of the day. Try a different perspective. Just as the Dalai Lama says, top to bottom, you can look at so many different sides to come up with a new perspective, something different. There's so many different responses you can have, so many different perspectives. I'm reminded of a game in improv, in playing improv, where you say something. For example, let's say one player gives you a cup and mimes a cup. And you say, oh, thank you for the cup. And then the game is you get dinged. You have to come up with a different answer. This is my cup. Thanks for giving me back. Ding, another perspective. Oh, I already have too many mugs. Ding, another answer, another perspective. And then you keep trying all these different answers. Wow, that's my favorite mug. Oh, wow, that's an antique mug. There's so many different perspectives. Wow, what is that? I've never seen, what is that called? There's so many different perspectives. We often are stuck in the perspective that we are used to just because we're used to it. Try something different. Fashion a new perspective. Fashions a new perspective in this moment. As you're sitting in this room, something that's coming up for you, come up with a different perspective. Try something on. The same way that you can try on a different shirt. Take this one off, put another on. Try another perspective. It's so easy to change our perspective. It's much easier than many other things. our emotions, etc., etc., those we sit with, we, you know, we're patient with, we let them expand, we let them, you know, shift our perspective. It's so much easier to be malleable with. Another aspect of shifting our perspective is also to take a larger perspective taking, not just our own perspective in a situation, but the perspective of others. So it's almost as if we go up, this like a bird's eye view, like, oh, all these other perspectives. And that can particularly be helpful when we are entangled with other people in a situation, instead of being just stuck in our own perspective, either taking their perspective or popping up and taking our perspective, all perspectives for all of us. I'll give you another example that just came up. I went walking the other day in the neighborhood, and I was wearing a mask, and I was walking on the sidewalk, and as I was walking, I approached a woman who was walking a dog from other direction who was not wearing a mask, and very abruptly, kind of very forcefully, she says, "Stop! You can't come this way. You can either go that way or that way, but not here." And I was kind of like, "Wow!" I was just walking. I was kind of doing like a walking meditation. I was first kind of up, both surprised with the abruptness and also upset. The perspective I had was, wait a minute, I'm the one wearing the mask and you're not wearing a mask and you're telling me where I can go and I can't go. Like, wait a minute. So anyway, I stopped, she passed, and I was like, wait a minute, I just feel like I was told down to, like, stop. So I kind of sat with this perspective, which made me very upset. I realized anger was coming up, a feeling of I was being told to, like, stop. And then I thought, wait a minute, what if I take her perspective? What if she was trying to protect me, saying, hey, stop, I'm not wearing a mask, so you can't come close to me. So with that interpretation, which was a much more charitable interpretation, even if she didn't exactly mean it, but for me, it released my heart. It just, this knot in my heart, like, oh yeah, let me imagine that from her perspective, she was just trying to protect me. Done. Anger, upset, gone. Instead of boiling in it. So many perspectives. So many perspectives we can take. So taking other people's perspective, taking the perspective of others. You know, when you're cut in traffic, if you're still driving, you know, it's the typical thing of having metaphor others. Maybe they're in a hurry because somebody's in trouble. Maybe they didn't see you. You know, we have a choice. And of course, depending on the choice we have in this perspective taking, we can either be happy, there's a sense of joy arising, or there can be a sense of contraction. And something that Desmond Tutu, Archbishop Desmond Tutu talks about, which is quite lovely, is taking a God's eye perspective, which is a way that allows us to transcend our limited identity and limited self-interest. And of course, one doesn't have to believe in God necessarily to experience this mind-altering shift in perspective. Astronauts apparently have this kind of shift in perspective. But this really comes back to the teaching about the self. When we're in the center, when our perspective, we're in the center, it's us, it's about us, it's about our happiness, it's about our grief, it's about our anxiety, our future. it's contractive. It's the, you know, if our focus is on I, myself, me, and mine, it's the sure way to be miserable. And in fact, there's studies that suggest this. So one study done by health researcher Larry Sherwitz. So they did a multi-center prospective study of coronary heart disease, and they found that the people who more frequently said I, me, or mine had a higher risk of having a heart attack, and a higher risk that the heart attack was fatal. Isn't that wild? I think that's wild. Well, understandable. They also found that the so-called self-involvement was a better predictor of death than smoking, high cholesterol levels, or high blood pressure. Self-involvement. Here's another study. This is done by researcher Johannes Zimmermann, who found that people who more often used first-person singular words, I or me, are more likely to be depressed than people who more often used first-person plural, we and us. And more evidence that being too self-absorbed, selfing too much, as we say in Buddhist circles, really does make us unhappy. And in fact, going through all the pillars of joy, they're not about us. And it's more about opening our perspective. It's about opening our perspective from us to we serving the way to shift. Another way of shifting, especially with another invitation for shifting the perspective, is a practice of suffering with. So when we are going through some difficulty, to imagine all the people who are going through this difficulty with us at the same time. And this is a practice that both Dalai Lama has talked about, as well as Desmond Tutu, and this is one that I've practiced a lot of, especially years ago when I was very ill with Lyme disease and I was homebound and bedbound. I would meditate and I would do metta and compassion practice for all the people just like me, who are bedbound right now, who are sick and who can't leave home, who are in pain right now. So the sense of common humanity, feeling that it's not just you, you are part of this large common humanity. There are so many people in any moment who are suffering just like you. So as I said, I wanted to spend a lot of time on perspective, and just a couple of minutes before wrapping up, to talk about humility. We are like everyone else, common humanity. And what I want to end with really is, as I mentioned at the beginning, is the idea of generosity of spirit. And I brought that into the guided meditation, because the idea of generosity of spirit actually includes all of the eight. So this idea of generosity of heart, with generosity of spirit, there's a wider perspective in which we see our connection to all others. It's the second pillar, humility. There's a humility that recognizes our place in the world and acknowledges that at another time we could be the one in need, whether it's material, emotional, or spiritual. generosity of spirit also subsumes this, the sense of humor, which is the third pillar. So there can be a sense of humor and the ability to laugh ourselves, and that we don't take ourselves too seriously. And the fourth pillar, acceptance. It can be an acceptance of life in which we don't force life to be any other than what it already is, with a sense of generosity of spirit. It's like, life is like this. Generosity of spirit. The fifth pillar being forgiveness. Again, with generosity of spirit, there is a forgiveness of others and releasing what might have otherwise been. So it's kind of the sense of giving of the heart. And of course, there can be gratitude for all that we have been given with the generosity of spirit. Our heart feels full. And we feel our own abundance. With gratitude, we feel our own abundance. Number seven, deep compassion arises to help others in need. The sense of, generosity of spirit is feeling their need, feeling they're just like us. We are moved to help, to support. And last, which is actually generosity itself. Generosity is when we see our own wealth, our own richness in so much that we have, not just in money or resources, but in the smile, in kindness, in our perspective, in giving others the benefit of the doubt, is an act of generosity. It's a generosity of spirit. So to bring this all to a close, I'd like to invite us all to perhaps in practicing sitting with the idea of generosity of spirit as a way to give to others, and generosity with ourselves also. And to say, one thing that I teach also, as many of you know here, I see some people who have come to what's called happy hour, which is something that's taught from 6 to 7 p.m. every weekday. The next week, my intention is to go through each of these pillars, one by one by one, in guided meditations and explore them in every session. So if that might sound of interest to you, please drop in. Actually, I'll be doing it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And information is both on my website, which I can put on chat here. And you're welcome to check it out if you're curious, if you want to explore having more time, like an 8-night series of exploring each of these pillars in guided meditations. So with that, I went a little over time. I'll pause and hand it over to Mary.